Good morning and welcome to the FTS bet slip on Monday the 20th of May. One of the exact reasons I started this podcast was so I can get things off my chest. And when you are, you know, you're rattling around at home on your own or currently up in Cambridge and things come in your mind and there's no one to get speak to about it, I thought the old podcast, it used to be the blog post writing and typing, but obviously a podcast is much more immediate and a much quicker, and we have got one today. I mean, I genuinely don't think the world can get any more fucking balmy than what is going on at the minute. And I driving up the M11 yesterday, and obviously my boy, we're trying to avoid all talk of exams and work and stress and pressure, and he says to me in the car as we're on the M11. Have you seen the petition for Game of Thrones? I said, what? He said, petition. He said, over 1 million people have signed a petition for Game of Thrones. I said, what the fuck are you on about? He said, over 1 million people, they don't like it, so they've signed a petition to get it remade. I mean, I don't watch hardly any TV. I did ask earlier if any last couple of weeks ago anybody got anything. The only series I have watched for one episode right through to the end is The West Wing, and it's still the best TV I've ever watched. Pretty much everything that gets made is a load of old bollocks. And I mean, what the fuck is going on? People are turning on their TV, don't like what they're watching, and rather than hit the fucking off button, they've got, I'm fucking lost for words. They want to write a petition, make it again, please, I don't like this. What are we fucking living in? Genuinely, what world are we living in that over 1 million people in this fucking world are doing shit like that? What is going on? It's a fucking TV program. Turn your TV off. The people on the petition should have a fucking off button so we can turn them off. What the fuck is going on? If they made another episode of the fucking West Wing, I turned it on and thought, I watched that, I didn't like it, I'd turn it off and go and do something else. You'll watch too much fucking TV and shit anyway. What? I mean, it's mental. What is going on? Oh, I don't like that. Make it again for me. Do me a fucking favour. It's a TV programme. Gee, I mean, we got people starving in the world, homeless, more in the Western civilised world, more homeless people on the streets than ever before. We've got a fucking president of America threatening war with Iran by fucking Twitter, which is a statement I never thought I'd ever say. And over 1 million people are fucking signing petitions to get a TV series. Oh my, I mean, I've never seen an episode of it. What the fuck is happening in this world? Honestly, it's unbelievable. And please, if you're on, slim chance, if you're on the fucking petition and you're listening to this, stop now, fuck off. I really don't want anything to do with you, genuinely. I cannot be doing with it. Right, that's that done. Where next? It's fucking mad. It's mad. I've lost the plot, see? I've lost the plot. This is what happens when I get mad. Let's do the pod horses. Let's do them. I've got two of them. Let's get them out there. Where are they? It's mental. It's absolutely... 3:15 at Carlisle, Tadawal, and 7 o'clock at Windsor, Tropics. They're the two pod place horses. Football trades, let's do that. Let's get that bit done. I have got one for you, which is in the Allsvenskan at 6 o'clock, AIK versus Falkenberg. If it's 0-0 after 20 minutes, drip lay in a first half goal. So AIK versus Falkenberg in the Allsvenskan, 6 o'clock. If it's 0-0 after 20 minutes, drip lay in over sort of 20 to 35, a first half goal. Obviously, good to see some of you made money on Kupka. I didn't watch it, but I was following on sort of line, and he seemed to be doing a major job of gassing it. But the joy is if you'd obviously greened up, you don't have to worry about that. But he did get it done. And DJ for me, Dustin Johnson, he's just got a massive time form squiggle for me, that guy in majors. You know, I know he's 1-1, but whenever he looks, whenever somebody tells him, hey, you've got a chance of winning this, he seems to go completely off the rails. I'm genuinely, he's a bit like McIlroy for me. I'm not sure they'll ever win another one. But you know what I'm like with my sweeping statements. I get myself in trouble. But yeah, no, it was nice to get some golf profits sorted out from there. And fair play to the lad. 4 wins in 8 is some golfing. Seminars, God, very earliest, I was absolutely knackered. I just want to say now they're all done. Thanks to everybody who came to a seminar, both NEC, the two in London and Manchester Saturday. It was great to meet some new guys. I really enjoyed all the days. They're fantastic and all for different reasons. You know, just each one had its own slight different dynamic. But really good guys. So I do thank you very much, and I hope you did all learn something and move forward. For me, it's, you know, I've said in all the rooms, the psychology of you guys it intrigues me. It's probably what keeps me going with all this, because I just, you know, meeting people. And the one thing I like, particularly in the last two, the honesty that people had in a slightly smaller setting, people admitting to addictions and people who, you know, I'm not mentioning any names, who trying to put bets on in an underground car park and because it wouldn't go through, and it then lost, then won, and they would have won money, but they didn't because there was no signal, then sending them completely on tilt. And admitting to sort of betting in Bolivia at 2 in the morning and doing their nuts. It's just fascinating. I find it absolutely fascinating. Certainly on Saturday, I did a walkthrough of a game in Freiburg and pricing it up with the guys, and hopefully I think they learnt something from that. And it's something that I'll move further towards in a few years' time, showing you how to do these things. But it is fascinating for me to the psychology of you guys and what you bet on, how you bet, the stats you use, you know, looking at all this, oh, they scored 8 goals in the first half and they did, so that makes it an 80% chance. It's just complete and utter nonsense, of course, but, you know, part of it's that you don't know better and that's sort of desperate to win a tenner. But hopefully the guys who came, to a man and lady, you're absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure things will be a lot better come August, but just want to take a sort of public thank you to all of you who come, and I'll be working on getting ready for next season now through the summer, and we'll be good to go. What else was there? Well, I've got a couple of stories, and I was talking about America. Well, I mentioned it the other day. Let's do that one first. So I go to America a lot. I've been to Vegas alone about 65 times in the last sort of 20 years. I used to go a hell of a lot to play poker. I've always been a bit fascinated with Americans. You know, we obviously have a conservative Labour divide here, and then we throw in a few. The Republican-Democrat divide out there is something else, particularly in certain states. And I've seen people come to blows. I remember I went to the first NFL game they played at Wembley, and Republicans and Democrats were having a fight when we were in the queue to go home. The horses sort of hold you on Wembley Way to let the underground clear. And a couple of Americans, we were walking down sort of side by side with them, and they were talking football, and then it developed into politics, and then it developed into a full-blown fist fight. And they are quite, given my nature where I like to poke people and wind up quite often at the poker tables, I used to wind people up, and I sort of from the Al Gore days when there was those sort of Chad vote slips, it was called, wasn't it, where the punch hadn't quite gone through or whatever, and they had that recount, I sort of became fascinated with American politics and just Americans in general. So been quite a lot, and we used to always go and play in, when I first started earning half decent money, go and have 3 days in Vegas, go down to Palm Springs and play golf, and then go back to Vegas for 2 or 3 days and then fly home. And one particular trip, I don't know how many years ago, but a good 10 years ago or more, we're going to play golf in Vegas, but one of the guys was in Thailand. So 3 of us flew to Vegas and had the 3 days, and he was going to fly from Thailand home and join us in Palm Springs. So we got to Palm Springs. It's all we always used to go around Thanksgiving week. I think it was like the Monday of Thanksgiving week, and he was landing on the Tuesday. So when we got there, we thought we're going to have a game of golf. Went into the pro shop at the golf course, tee time for three, and the guy said, I'm going to put you with somebody. He had a single. He said, I've got an American guy single. You know, we like to have fours on the course. We're going to put you with him. Okay, fine, no problem. Guy's name was Mike. Absolutely lovely guy. He was a photographer. He turned up with his camera with about, you know, 20-inch lens and was taking landscape photos of the desert mountains. You know, Palm Springs is one big valley. And taking pictures of us hitting golf shots. A really, really, really nice guy. And I was in a buggy with him and going around talking about all sorts of things. No hint that he was any form of a lunatic, just a really nice guy. So when we finished, he said, guys, I've had a lovely day today. Don't know what you're doing for dinner tonight, but me and my wife are eating at this, and it was like a cliffside seafood restaurant. He said, me and my wife are eating there. I'd like you three to come along. Dinner's on me and be my guests. And I think they obviously had a few quid. Palm Springs is in a cheap place to live, and that was his holiday home. They had a house in Seattle, I think, as well, was where they lived. So we said, yeah, no problem. Great, fantastic. Now, I'd been on the golf course from, Vegas and golf course from England, and it's middle of November. So there was nothing particularly tanned about me, but on the golf course that day, it was quite sunny. I'd obviously caught a little bit of colour, and we pulled the car up at the restaurant, got out, and him and his wife were stood by the restaurant door. And as he's got out the car, he's waved, and we've walked over. She said hello to my mate, a thick-set Scots mate, who I will bring back into the vasectomy story later. He looks a bit like Shrek. He's a real thick-set. He's one of my best mates, thick-set Scots guy. Other guy, Keith, a bit older than us, sort of 10 years older, grey hair. So she said hello to the Scots guy, and he said hello to Keith. She hasn't said hello to me. She's looked me square in the eye and gone, are you a Muslim? And I went, sorry? She said, are you a Muslim? I said, no, I'm English. No, just no real religious affinity whatsoever. You look like a Muslim. And now the two boys with me have started laughing. I said, I don't know what you base that on. I said, I'm from outside London. I've got nothing remotely Muslim in me. She went, are you sure? Because you look like a Muslim. I went, no, I'm not. So anyway, we went into dinner. And she's walking up the steps. I thought, this has fucking got one here, haven't we? We have got a screwball here. She, and there was no hint of this in him at all, she was absolutely barking mad. She wanted to kill a Barack Obama. And I don't mean she wanted to kill him. She, with absolute venom, she wanted him dead. She wanted to split the country in two. She didn't care how you did it. You could do it east to west or north to south, and all the rich people live in one half and all the poor people live in the other half. And she's saying this with a straight face. And it's difficult when people are talking like that to obviously not lose your rag, but you're conscious that you're the guest of somebody. And he's being lovely. He's still sort of saying that. And he's, towards the end of the night, he said, have you got anywhere for Thanksgiving dinner? Because obviously restaurants get really busy. No, we haven't booked. Oh, you must come to us. You've got to come to us. We're having a big barbecue at our villa, blah, blah, blah. And I walked out. And the guy said, I cannot go to that barbecue. I said, there's no, not in a million years can I go to that barbecue. I'm going to go and do something else. And one of the guys felt that he should go just for this night and did go. But I mean, they're absolute screwballs. So all night she just was looking at me as if, I don't trust you. You are some sort of Muslim. She must have made reference to it at least 10 times. And those who've met me know I look nothing like a Muslim. I'm very Clooney-esque, chiseled features. You know, Sam gives me the odd bag of donuts to try and keep my belly up, because I think she feels that I might get stolen away because I get all the looks when we go out. So I don't know where they got that from. But they're barking mad. So there you go. That's your opening gambit to someone. Are you a Muslim? Yeah, interesting. Right, next. Yes, yeah, the old snip. Now, you'll like this. If you are thinking of having the snip, you may not want to listen to this if you're slightly squeamish, but it is quite amusing. I'm going back. Well, it is. I was 29 or 30. I think I was 30. So I'm going back 18 years. And I am... I'm playing golf one day, and we used to have like a roll-up thing where you just turned up and all the balls went in a hat and you drew them out. And there was an old guy in it, who about 70, who was a surgeon, and he'd retired, but he did a couple of days a week. And he's playing with me one day, and a really nice guy. Really, you know, I played with him a few times, really nice old boy. And he's walking along behind me. He said, "Ian, you've got a lump on your neck." And I did, I sort of felt, and I had a little sort of thumb-sized lump on the back right of my neck. And he said, "It's probably just a sebaceous cyst, but you want to get that looked at and get, you know, have that removed." He said, "I can do that for you if you like." Oh no, that's great, didn't think anything of it. We finished, and he said, "Yeah, come down on Thursday morning," and he, at St. Thomas's Hospital in London. He said, "Come there," and he said, "I'll book you in, do it." So sure enough, you know, 4 days later, I turned up. He did a local anaesthetic and he cut this lump out. Absolutely no problem. Off I went. What I should hasten to add to say now, he was quite a high up surgeon throughout his working life. I don't know what area he specialised in, but he now sort of just did things like that, cyst removals and vasectomies and things like that. But he did have a little tick. Not in his hands, but if you were talking to him, so he'd sort of sit down after golf, and every sort of 2 minutes, his head would just do a little flick, just a real quick little flick to the right, and you know, you couldn't help but notice it as you got to know him. You know, first time you met him, you thought, "What's that?" But didn't think anything of it. So he did that absolutely fine. You know, healed up perfect. No harm to the Clooney-esque looks. I'm still there, and. About a year later, Sam's gone for smear tests, and Sam's 6 years older than me, so she'd have been about 36. And obviously in that discussion, it must have come up about taking the pill. Our two kids were born, and she came home and said, "I've spoke to whoever, whether it was a nurse or a doctor, and they said I really should look at stop taking the pill because it's not, you know, it's not good for you to be taking it." You know, she'd been taking it, 15, 16 years, maybe more. It's not good to be taking it for a prolonged period like that. We're not going to have any more kids. You know, the easiest answer for this is for you to have a vasectomy. And it really didn't faze me at all. And I thought, oh, that guy does vasectomies. Rather, you know, I didn't want to go marching down the doctors. So the next time I played golf and he was there, I sort of pulled him to one side and said, "Look, you know, Sam's got a situation with the pill, you know, been advised not to take it." He went, "No, that's right." He said they shouldn't take it for that length of time. I said, "Is there any chance I can have a vasectomy? Happy to pay for it." He said, "Oh, don't worry about it." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll book you." And he said, I'll ring you up and I'll give you a time." And about 2 weeks later, he did. Sure enough, he rang me. He said, "Ian, if you can come up to the hospital at 10 o'clock, and it was a Thursday morning, 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning, we can do that for you." So didn't think anything of it. I went to work, left work, went up there, get in. I said, "Anything to expect?" He said, "No." He said, "Just much the same, local anaesthetic. So you just lie in there, he's chatting away, does whatever he needs to do." Says to me, says, you're done." I went, "Right, okay." I said, what sort of next? Am I okay to go back to work? Anything I should experience?" He went, no. He said, "You might feel a little pinch later in the day when the anaesthetic wears off." He said, "You might just feel a little pinch either side." He said, "But no, it'll be fine. Don't, you know," he said, "you'll get sort of maybe a small bruise, but you'll be absolutely fine." So off I trotted to the car, drove back to work, into my office. Sitting at my office desk, I don't know, I've probably got back there by midday. By about 1 o'clock, I thought, "Cool, that hurts. That really hurts." and my trousers started feeling a bit tighter, and I felt, by half one, I was in real agony, and I sort of said, look, guys, this is really, he said it would only be a little pinch. I said, this is really painful. I said, the anaesthetic's clearly worn off. This is really hurting. I'm going to have to go home. So I drove, that's no problem, I drove home, all the way home, killing me, got in, and I thought, well, that's not good. So I thought, I know what I'll do, I'll take my trousers off, I'd like suit trousers on, take them off, put a pair of shorts on, let a bit of air get there, and I, so I did that, sat down for about another hour, at excruciating pain now, absolutely excruciating, and my shorts are getting tighter and tighter, the front of my shorts are almost inflating out, and I'm thinking, this can't be right. So I phoned Sam up, and she's a bit of a sort of Google doctor. I said, I've had this done. I said, I'm in absolute agony here. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, this is really, really painful. She said, oh, you know, stop being a wimp, sit down. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll have a bath. So I went upstairs, ran a bath, stripped off. When I stripped off, I've now got, pardon the language, two boys downstairs the size of grapefruits. The relief when I took the shorts off was just fantastic, and they're now, it's like two purple grapefruits between my legs, and I thought, I'm in trouble here. So I thought the only person I knew that had had a vasectomy was the thick-set Scots guy who I went to, who used to go on golfing holidays with. So I've got in the bath with the phone, you know, one of the old sort of cordless phones, and I phoned him up, and I said, Andy, I said, I've just had the snip, mate. I said, I know you've had it. And he's already started laughing. I said, have you had any issues with it? He said, no, why? I said, well, I'm sat in the bath and I've got two purple grapefruits floating here. And now he's just dying of laughter. He's just, on the end of the phone, he's just cracking up laughing. I go, hang on a minute, mate. I mean, he said, oh, no. He said, I had two thumb print bruises either side. He said, that was it. He said, something's gone wrong there. And all the while, he's hysterically laughing. So I phoned Sam back. I said, Andy said this. She said, well, I think you better phone the doctors up. So I phoned the doctors and I said, emergency, I need to see somebody. I'm in trouble here. They said, can you get here? I said, yeah, I can. There's no way I could have got in the car. So I thought I'll have to walk, and it's about a mile away. So I set off walking, and it must have taken me about 2 hours to walk a mile. I was shuffling along like an old man, just shuffling left to right in absolute agony. Got to the doctors. I was fairly fit and healthy at the time. It was before any issues I'd ever had. My doctor, the last time I'd seen him, was about a 60-year-old bloke. So get in the waiting room. They said, somebody will see you in a minute. Get called through to go to the doctor. I kid you not, it was an absolutely stunningly looking about 28-year-old young woman. And I sort of froze. And she went, can I help you? And my exact words, I kid you not, my exact words out of my mouth were, my mate gave me a vasectomy. And she looked at me, and I could see in her head, she thought, I'm at home, and some bloke, I've let him get the kitchen knife out. I went up, and you could see it on her face, and I went, yeah, he did it this morning. She said, your mate. And I was sorry, I said, why I talk, I said, he's a surgeon up in London. I said, I play golf with him. She said, let's have a look then. And I just had to stand there and drop my shorts. And she instantly said, you need to go to hospital. And she said, can you get there on your own accord, or do you want me to call you an ambulance? I thought, I can't have an ambulance. I can't have all this fuss. So I phoned Sam up. I said, I'm going to start shuffling home. You need to leave work and come and pick me up. I've got to go to the hospital. So I had to go to, so I went to the hospital. And as it turned out, this surgeon, remember, he's got a tick. With the tick, he hadn't cut the correct tube for stopping what was required of a vasectomy. He had severed and cut the main artery to my scrotum, and all that was happening was all my blood was going there and just filling up like you would fill a balloon up with water. and it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I actually did say if I'd stayed for another hour longer, I'd have been in like serious trouble if I hadn't got it done. And I had to have it, had to go in hospital, had to have a full anaesthetic then and be knocked out and have it all corrected and sorted out. And I woke up on the Friday in, you know, Sam was there in absolute agony. Honestly, I know women say childbirth. This was absolute agony. I couldn't move. But Tottenham were playing Liverpool on the Saturday lunchtime kickoff at the old White Hart Lane. And at the time, I had a ticket in the south stand behind the goal where everybody stands up. And I, Sam said, "You can't go to football tomorrow." I said, "I've got to go." I said, "Tottenham Liverpool. I can't miss Tottenham Liverpool." She said, "Ian, you're not going to the football. Don't be so stupid." Anyway, my mate, who I went to the football with at that time, it wasn't Suggsy back then, said, "What are you doing?" I said to him, "You've got to get hold of him." And I said, it was the early days of mobile phones. I had a great big Motorola thing. I said, pick me up at like 9:30. I'm going to the football. And I signed myself out, whatever you do, the release yourself thing from hospital, to great dismay from doctors and nurses, to great anger from my good lady, to go to the football. And my mate dropped me at the ground, and I had to then, my seat was about 20 rows back, so I've got to go up like 20 stairs, and it's taking me forever. I've got there, and I've got up there, and literally the game has kicked off. And now I need a pee. I've got to go for a pee. And I'm shuffling back down these stairs now with 5,000 Spurs fans singing "He Walks Like a Cowboy" and ripping the piss out of me. Go and have a pee. Then that process repeated on the way back. So I had to come out and obviously shuffle back up the stairs in great agony. Liverpool won the game. It was an absolute fucking disaster. The moral of the story is don't get one of your mates to give you the snip because it never really turns out well. So there, I'm sure some of you enjoyed that. Sorry it went on and on a bit too long. It was quite amusing. It's one of my dinner party stories. I still laugh about it now. At the time, it was not at all funny. Okay, that's it. I have nothing else. Have a lovely day. If you've got a vasectomy booked in the next couple of days, don't contact me. Depending on how things are with my boy, I'm going to try and get some stuff added to the site for results. I will cover the overdue maths bit. It's nothing great, it's just my views on certain things that people say. Betting-wise, obviously the football is, you know, I keep saying it is winding down. There'll be less now, and I'll put some more horse stuff on the podcast. But my attention, once my boy's done June the 6th, will be on sort of getting ready for next season. I haven't forgotten that I said we'd have the day in the pub. I'm going to try and look at all the responses and sort that out. Obviously, I didn't know what was happening with my boy, and I don't really know what's going to happen with him after June the 6th. We've got to get him this help. He obviously will want a couple of days off and get that, but I will be doing a day in the pub in London. It hopefully will be June the 13th still, but if I have to move the date, I will email out, but I will confirm that up over the next couple of days when I speak to him sort of through these exams, and I will get that. And those who emailed in, if you can just keep the date free for a minute, I will let you know hopefully by the end of this week if it is June the 13th and who can come along and where it is, and we'll have a good old drink up and a bit of fun. Have a lovely Monday. Hope my story hasn't put anybody off anything, and I will be back almost certainly tomorrow morning.